Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries welcoming you to our 12th year of broadcasting, The Next Step with Father Vazquez. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Vazquez brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
I like coming to church. This is where I speak to God. Who said that? Which great saint of the Armenian church? Okay, let's even broaden it. Which saint of the Christian church said that? Which hierarch? Which priest? What theologian? What prominent leader of a seminary here in the United States? Well, yeah, well, let's give it to the United States, okay? In Western Europe, in Eastern Europe, in the world, who said that? I like coming to church. This is where I speak to God. Well, probably somebody said it along the way, but in this particular case, I'm talking about a young guy named Anastas. Out of the mouths of babes, a young boy. I've been going to Oakland, St. Vartan Armenian Church for the last few weeks to share in the Divine Liturgy there on Sunday mornings. And this young boy, a couple weeks ago, it was the Super Bowl week. They blamed Super Bowl for a reason that there weren't any kids in Sunday school, except for this one young man. And he was there, and after church, I went up to him, and I said, you know, that was beautiful. I'm glad to have seen you in church. And he said to me, just turned to me, and he said, I like coming to church. It's where I speak to God. Out of the mouths of babes. Isn't that beautiful? What a beautiful expression that is. And that's how I want to start off today's podcast. That expression, that beautiful expression, because today, later on in the show, we're going to be talking about the presentation. We're going to be talking about Christ 40 days after his birth. Yeah, I know it's St. Valentine's Day too, and I know some of the people in the Armenian church, oh, they shy away, they get scared, they don't want to talk about St. Valentine, even though he is a saint of the Christian church. A 4th century saint, pre-Chalcedon, therefore ipso facto a saint of the Armenian church as well. Well, let's say that he is recognized by the Armenian church as well. But today we're going to be talking about Diyarın Tarac, the presentation. Because if you celebrate the nativity on January 6th, count them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, until 40 days later, according to St. Luke the evangelist, the doctor evangelist, according to St. Luke, 40 days after the birth of Christ, his parents took him to the temple. Diyarın Tarac presentation. We're going to be talking about that in the second portion of today's show. But I started off today with this beautiful expression and want to share a few thoughts with you as we start off our podcast about our expressions, about how we express ourselves. I don't know if you've been following. We are now in the fourth week of WD168. It's a new program that we've put together, sort of commenting on the news items that are particularly important, particularly touching us within the church community. No, I'm not talking about, you know, what the Pope might say or what the Catholicos might say, what your local bishop might say, but news items in general that touch us, like the fear of war, like what's going on with fear in general. Just last week, a report came out, and I spoke about this only briefly in on our WD168. And, you know, it's a new show that we put out. We're in, like, our fourth episode. It's a weekly show. 168 having to do with the 168 hours that we're given every week. So it's a weekly show, kind of summarizing and then a little bit of commentary and take. So one of the news items that I picked up on was that two of the largest teachers unions here in the United States have warned against these take cover drills or these lockdown drills. Now, I don't know how prevalent these kind of drills are in other countries. I'll tell you, here in the United States, I grew up in an era in the post-nuclear era where mutual destruction was talked about. After World War II, after Hiroshima, after Nagasaki, and the Cold War, and the Cold War started, there were fears that we might be the victims of nuclear annihilation, because as the scenario went, there was no protection against nuclear weapons except for mutual annihilation. In other words, if some nuclear power were to hit you, namely if the Soviets were to hit the United States, and you know, this goes vice versa too, that the only thing you could do is to hit back, and therefore the deterrent to nuclear annihilation, the deterrent to nuclear war, is mutual annihilation. In other words, I'm not going to hit you because there is a fear that I'm going to get hit back, that I'm going to be annihilated. So I therefore will not start this. And so that was basically the checkmate move, right? Or not checkmate, the stalemate, right? You get them in a point where you can't move. And if you did move, you know, somebody's gonna get hit. So that was the era that I grew up in. And I remember in elementary school, we used to have take cover drills. And teacher would walk in and say, take cover. I remember being lined up in the hallways where we would have to sit down and with our knees toward our forehead, with our heads down. It was a interesting time. And today, what they're talking about is lockdown drills. Lockdown drills in the elementary schools. And this is what the teachers' unions are talking about, because they're saying that these are just, all they're doing is that they're making a lot of people anxious. They're making a lot of young kids trauma. They're facing trauma. They're being traumatized. Anxiety is escalating because of these drills. So we have a phenomenon now in this greatest country, right, which we call the United States of America, where we have so many freedoms that we enjoy. On top of it, we also have freedoms to buy and stockpile weapons. So some people with malicious intent have stockpiled weapons, and they go out and they hurt people. We call this the active shooter. There is an active shooter, they say, and people panic, as you should, as you need to get out of the way. Active shooters, it's a phenomena that happens. And it can happen anywhere, where a peaceful group of people may be watching a movie, maybe going to school, yeah, maybe playing in the park, maybe praying in church. And someone comes along and decides to shoot, decides to take the lives of innocents. And we now refer to this as the active shooter. There's an active shooter, and kids are scared. We all are scared. And this, to me, was one of the big phenomena that I saw in Armenia when a few years ago when we visited there, and still up to this day, it's phenomenal, the safety. I mean, we were walking around the opera house not during the day. We were walking at night. It was like 11:30, and there's kids like playing all over the place, running around, riding their bicycles. No fear. Completely void of fear. And I'm just thinking, like, what is that fear that we experience? And certainly fear is the antithesis of faith, right? A lot of people think that disbelief is like the opposite of faith. But no, if you have fear, that's the opposite of faith. And fear means that, especially most of the time when you realize that there is justifiable fear and there is unjustifiable, because we work ourselves up. Like, for let me give you a justifiable fear, okay? Just happened to us last weekend. Justifiable fear, okay? So we are, as I mentioned, we're going to Oakland, California, where we're doing services. Last weekend, we took a flight out of San Jose. And I was very lucky that I took that flight, but we had a baptism to do in San Jose. And these are, like, proximity-wise, they're about 50 miles from each other. This is called the San Francisco Bay Area. So Oakland, you can imagine like a triangle, an upside-down triangle, and San Jose is at the bottom of that, and San Francisco and Oakland are connected by a bridge. So we were down in San Jose on Saturday, did a baptism there, and then Sunday went up to Oakland, drove up to Oakland. Very fortunate, because the last few weeks that I've been going up to Oakland, I've been flying in the morning, coming back in the afternoon. I probably would have been just completely blown out of my mind if I had flown into Oakland that morning, because the entire Bay Area was under this severe windstorm. That morning we drove across the bridge, Susan and I, and we're just like, I mean, being thrown around from one side to the other. I'd hate to think what the airplane would have been like. But that afternoon, we got word from the airline that our flight had been canceled because of the wind. I called up the airline. They said, well, we've rescheduled you for 7:30. So the flight that we were supposed to take out from at 5 o'clock is now at 7:30 in the evening. Okay, no problem. We get to the airport, and that flight has now been delayed from 7:30 to 10:15. Why? Because of the wind, all of the flights are being diverted to San Jose. There's a big pileup from San Francisco, Oakland, Sacramento. They're all coming down to San Jose. Okay, anyway, we waited it out. And 10:15, we got onto the plane. And we're heading down to Burbank. That's where the airport is here in Southern California. The big one is LAX. Burbank is one of the smaller airports. And all of a sudden we get into Burbank and things are getting really rough, as is after they've served us the drinks and everything. So all of a sudden they say, okay, put on your seatbelts. We're going to go be landing soon, shortly. Anyway, for the next half hour, we are like in this windstorm up above. We're still up high. And at 10,000, 15,000 feet, we're seeing the lights underneath, but it is a bumpy, bumpy ride. And next thing we notice that the scenery is just repeating. So we realize that we're in a circular loop. We are going around the city of Burbank, round and round. We're seeing the same scenes out the window. And it's getting, let me tell you, we never panicked. It wasn't at that panic mode like you see in the movies, you know. People weren't screaming, but it was, on the other hand, people weren't making any noise. It was pretty quiet in that cabin. And the pilot comes on and says, okay, we're going to be landing. And all of a sudden, from this circular movement for half an hour, he decides to go down. And now it is really windy. And he is like maneuvering. And we feel one wing going up, one going down. We're feeling the bounces. We're feeling him put extra boosts on the jets. And we are going down wondering, you know, is he going to make that runway? And we're seeing the runway, and you're going down, and we're seeing landmarks that we know. After all, we live in this area, and we're seeing the landmarks that we know. We're getting very close to the earth, and we're now going over the freeway, which is just before the landing area at Burbank. And now we're seeing everything. We're seeing the hangars. We're seeing the cars. We're seeing the people on the ground. The cars are coming into focus. And we are literally like about 20 feet, 15 feet from landing. The landing gears are down. And like I said, we're not ready for a crash. There wasn't a panic like that, but we were getting ready for a very hard landing, you know, very, very hard landing. It was, the wind was crazy. And we're about 10 feet from the ground, and all of a sudden you just feel those engines going on full throttle. You could feel the captain pulling that throttle, and we go straight up into the air, just straight from ground zero, straight up into the air. And we realized he wasn't going to be landing, you know, definitely. And he came on about half a minute later over the loudspeaker, and he says, as you could imagine, we're not landing. We deemed it unsafe to land. He says, we're going to be taking you down to LAX now, which is remarkably, in traffic, about two-hour drive here in Los Angeles. LAX was remarkably 7.5 minutes away. And it was like night and day. There was no wind over there. So the wind speed at Burbank was upward of 50 miles an hour on the ground. So very fortunate, very thankful that they made the decision not to land. But would you say that that's justifiable fear? Yeah, I think that's justifiable fear outside of your control. Outside of your control. Now, when we come to the active shooters, when we come to the environmental concerns that we have, the virus that's going on now, the coronavirus that's hitting, and people are getting news reports. You know, we're hearing about 1,000 people, 2,000 people. We're hearing about people being quarantined in the tens of thousands. We're hearing about the virus moving. And all of this builds anxiety in us. Now, one, the justifiable, you're coming down into it. This one is now based on fear. Fear that you're getting information and not fully processing that. Because no matter what, I mean, certainly, if you're one of the 50,000 people, it's horrible. But when you look at the statistics, they're saying that there are more people that are dying of the flu than of the coronavirus. And yet the coronavirus is now, because it's new, because it's hitting the news, it's getting people excited. And now we have some unjustifiable fears. And in the same way, these educators, these teachers' unions were saying that maybe we are putting fear in the children, fear that they shouldn't be having when we do these exercises against active shooters. Tragically, this reality exists in our country, that random shooters are out there. But when you look at the numbers and you have to do the statistics, you realize that relatively, you know, it's not that big of a number. I hate to say it that way. I really, really. And I'm hoping that you, my listeners, are understanding the spirit in which I'm saying it. You know, there's nothing proud about it. It's like that moment in Superman, right? When he saves Lois Lane from the helicopter. You know, the helicopter crashed and he saves her, and he turns to her and he says, like, I hope this doesn't deter you from flying, because it's still much safer than most anything else. And when you look at the numbers, yeah, the number of accidents on the road far surpass the number of people that fall down out of the sky, out of planes. So it becomes a number game at some point. And those numbers can be fearful. People bet on those numbers, right? And if you bet against them, it could be very scary. It could be very, very scary. So I throw this out because that's where I started this week's 168. It's like we have so many of these issues of fear. And then you have, on the side of the church, Christ coming out, and he uses the fear in a very interesting way. He says, do not be afraid, little flock. It refers to us as the ones who are under his provident care. His flock. Do not be afraid. And I love it in Armenian. Miyergunchir hod pokrig. Do not be afraid, little flock. And when you hear that, there is a calming element to that, isn't there? And it reminds us that as a church, as the body of Christ, we have this message. We have the capability to deliver this message. And perhaps at this time of fear, when everyone is talking about so much fear hitting us, bombarding us, whether it's from the outside, inside, of viruses, of people's action, it's time for the church to say, do not be afraid, little flock. There are a few other do not fear statements of our Lord Jesus Christ. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul, he says. Rather, fear that which can destroy both body and soul. Now, you know, this gets into a different discussion about where and how these things are done. But here's the idea about fear. A lot of times the fears that we have build up anxiety and cause the stress that we have in our lives. And I'm not just talking about the fear alone. The stress accounts for most of the physical ailments that we have. And so now we're all of a sudden talking about something else, aren't we? When these educators get up and they say, we do not want to traumatize the children. It's not just about, you know, we don't want them to be afraid. Well, that trauma builds up and it causes the stress that later reveals itself in different ailments and different physical afflictions. And imagine that, we as a church have the answer. Imagine that, we as a church have the ability to calm. We as the church have that message, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid, little flock. And that flock means that there is somebody who is with us, that we are not alone. This is a bigger discussion, of course, but I wanted to start off today with this because, you know, we're in a season just before Lent. We're in a season where next week we'll be remembering people who were, we remember them as the brave, Wotan the Brave. Next week is the feast of two incredible friends, Wotan and Lewont. And these two, with cross and sword, with cross and will and determination, were able to defeat something greater. Not the body. No, we're not talking about killings, maiming, or anything like that. We're talking about the defeat that comes internally, the defeat that that comes with God's love. So I share this with you today just as a little sideline about fear, about us putting away our fears, understanding the power that the church has, and that when you look on the world scene, there are so many opportunities, so many, and especially now with this coronavirus, there's so many opportunities for us to truly be afraid. Justifiable, unjustifiable, but what's really important is to understand that when you turn it over to God, it is that faith that counteracts that fear. Let's take a break right now. Here's the song of the day, and I'll come back and talk to you about Diaran Taraj.
Kitty, you're the top, Tamazara, how you Tamazara. Are you Tamazara? Tamazara. Are you Tamazara? Are you Tamazara? Tamazara. Are you Tamazara? I even just say, Slame, Slame, Tamazara. Are you Tamazara? Tamazara. Tamazara. Tamazara.
Inga and Anush doing Tamzara. What a beat. What a song. What a dance. What a good tune. Inga and Anush. I'll have a link on today's show notes to check out not only this song, but all of their wonderful music. I really love their voices, just their harmonies that they put together. Hope you enjoyed that. That was an old song, Tamzara. Yeah, it goes back a long way, and of course a new rendition. When I say new, I think this is about 15, 20 years old, but what's 15, 20 years old in the case of like a 200-year-old song? You know, Village. And kind of wanted to get us in the beat because we're going to be talking about some kind of like very tribal thing, namely what we do on Dhyanantaraj, coming up in a moment. Okay, as promised, I'm going to talk to you about Dhyanantaraj, the presentation of the Lord. Comes to us from the Gospel of Luke chapter 2. And I'm not afraid to say Happy Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's to all of you. It's a day of love, of happiness. Saint Valentine. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not going to go down that route of being scared. Oh, yeah. I know people in the Armenian church, Armenian circles. Oh, no, Valentine wasn't Armenian. Well, guess what? Neither was Sarkis, neither was Kevork, St. George, neither was St. Gregory the Illuminator. No, Valentine was not Armenian. He was of Rome. He was, however, a personality of the 3rd century. Let's see, he died in 269, if I remember right. So he is a saint of the Christian church, pre-Chalcedon, which means that, guess what? We get to have him as a saint as well. Yes, we probably don't remember, but, you know, if they're in the Christian church, pre-Chalcedon, the great division for us, the lesser Orthodox, as they call us, the lesser Oriental Orthodox. They have all kinds of neat little taggings for us. Yeah, you'd be surprised who does the tagging. The people in, who would call you a lesser Oriental Orthodox? Who would call you that? People in the greater Oriental Orthodox. I know, it's not Oriental, Eastern Orthodox now. So many different catalogings of something so pure as Christianity. But anyway, February 14th, as far as I remember as a child too, St. Valentine Day was here in America was a very secular holiday. You'd share with people little trinkets of love like roses, flowers, cards, candy. I mean, I remember in elementary school they used to have these small little cards that you would pass out to your classmates. No, you didn't need to be in love. In fact, I remember in class they told us that, you know, if you're going to pass out to one, you've got to pass out to everybody. And they were basically like little cardboard. I'm sure they still have them. Little cardboard cards with a little saying on it. I remember one from The Simpsons, in fact. It was a little choo-choo train, and it says, "I choose you to be my Valentine." Isn't that cute? Yes, they were all cute. Anyway, Valentine Day, February 14th. But for us in the Armenian Church, if you celebrate the Nativity of Jesus Christ on January 6th, which we do, you count off 40 days and you get to February 14th. This is the same day that in the Western world, Occidental world, if we're going to use Oriental, let's use Occidental, okay? In the Western world, they would count off from December 25th and get to February 2nd, called a Candlemas, or in more understandable terms, Groundhog Day. And I say that because when we get to the story of Diadon Tadach, we have bonfires, very similar to the groundhog idea. You know, there's some secularization that goes with it. And I know it's arguable, but, you know, the secularization in our case came before the religious, before the Jesus event. But let me share with you the story of the presentation of this very special day, Diadon Tadach. It comes to us from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 2, verses 22 and following. And I'll give you a quick summary. Basically, it was the time for purification rites according to the law of Moses. Now, purification rites, whose purification would that be? Certainly not the babies. This is 40 days after the birth of Christ. Whose purification? It's Mary's, right? After childbirth, the purification rites. So when the time came for the purification rites required by the law of Moses, and I'm saying that because I want you to remember that, the law of Moses, there's going to be something I want to share with you in a few minutes. Joseph and Mary took Jesus to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord because it was written in the law of the Lord that every firstborn male is to be consecrated to the Lord and to offer a sacrifice in keeping with what is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of doves and two young pigeons. Now, why do I bring that up about the law? Well, think about it. If you're familiar in Armenian circles, on the 40th day of any child being born, they'd take them to the church to have a blessing. And you will say, well, it should be the first male child. No. Because this is the law of Moses. We don't live under that law. What did St. Paul say? There is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither slave nor free. There is neither male nor female. They are all one in Christ. There it is. You hear it right here. Every child is precious. Every child is consecrated to the Lord already. So we go through this thing and we see that they bring Jesus to the temple. And there was in Jerusalem a man named Simeon. Scripture says he was righteous and devout. And by the way, the person who's writing this is Luke, the only evangelists, out of the four evangelists, he's the only one who remembers the story of the presentation. And it's interesting because, according to tradition, Luke was a doctor, a physician. So it's interesting that he would know the rite of purification, obviously, right? Or childbirth. So he writes about this man named Simeon. And it was revealed to Simeon that by the Holy Spirit that he wouldn't die until he saw the Lord's Messiah. And so Simeon makes his way over to the temple, and when the parents brought Jesus, the child, to do for him what is the custom of the law, Simeon took Jesus into his hands, and he praised God, saying, "Sovereign Lord, as you have promised, you may now dismiss your servant in peace," right? He had been promised that he wouldn't see death until he saw Jesus. He said, "Okay, go ahead. I'm free to go, because I have seen with my eyes your salvation, which you have prepared in the sight of all nations, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel." So this is the proclamation made by Simeon. Remember that. The child's father and mother marveled at what was said, and Simeon blessed them and said to Mary, "This child is destined to cause the falling and rising of many in Israel, and to be a sign that will be spoken against, so that the thoughts of many hearts will be revealed, and a sword will pierce your own soul too." How difficult that must have been. Now, this is the story of the presentation. A couple things that I want you to keep in mind here, one of which was the idea that this was under the old law that they did this. Secondly, that Simeon blesses the child, blesses Mary, and sings the praise of God through the blessing that the child has brought to him. What does that make him? It makes him the first witness of Christ. Now, traditionally in the church, we talk about the first martyrdom, the first martyr of Christ, Nachavaga, and Arachi Mardiros, the first martyr of the church, was Saint Stephen. This is the first witness. We use the word vaga in Armenian, Nachavaga, meaning the first witness to Stephen. He did it through his martyrdom. This is the first witness by his expression. And you can argue, you can go even back to the manger, at the manger where you had the Magi there and giving the gifts. They acknowledged they were the witness of Christ through their giving. So different ways that we are expressing our love and our devotion to Christ, one through giving, one through expressions, one through martyrdom, each of them coming together as a witness, a complete witness to the divinity of Christ. And what is that divine nature of Christ? It's expressed in what he said, the light for revelation, the light for revelation. Here's the new light. It's coming into our world, and it has come. This is why I tell you many times when we talk about a time to come, when Jesus will come and he will rule, and we are so consumed about times in the future instead of living for the day. Jesus came, he enacted the kingdom. The kingdom has been enacted, and there it is in the proclamation given by Simeon. So this event takes place in Jerusalem on the 40th day after the birth of Christ. And it's called the presentation, Candlemas. It is called the purification of Mary. And in our church, we have an opportunity to celebrate this, and we do so with kind of an interesting interesting event. We light fires and we jump over them. And you know who jumps over them? Young kids. Young couples, yeah. And I know people try to say, okay, you know, this is heathenistic. Well, guess what? Most of your life is heathenistic. You know? I mean, we got to get with the program. I mean, you look up at the flag at a football game, at a baseball game, and you say, "I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America." and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God. We say this. You say it in your own countries to different, there's different allegiances that you have to inanimate objects, okay? Now, you're not pledging an allegiance to the material, to the strings, to the stars and the stripes. You are pledging an allegiance for what it stands for. Got it? This is like, I can't take it when especially self-righteous people come. Well, we don't believe in you, what you believe. You guys are fire worshippers. No, we're not fire worshippers. We're not fire worshippers. These are means by which we, in our head, can understand something that is very complex. And the complexity of God's being, of God loving us, is so great that we use different means by which we understand. This is a time, if you think about it, before Christianity, in fact, from the beginning of time, it is a time, it is a fertility rite. What's coming up? What is the midwinter? It is just before spring. Spring is a time of renewal. Is it any wonder that the resurrection takes place in the spring? Spring is a time for new life. All traditions look at the spring. The days get longer and there is new warmth. The ice melts, the snow melts, and new life comes about. We celebrate that. And I know those of you down under, it's just the opposite, right? I mean, I guess you guys, it's like autumn right now. And it's not about the times. It's not about the dates. It's about understanding that there are seasons, right? And there are seasons for everything. And so here we are, getting ready for the spring, and we have this great fertility rite. We bring couples and they jump over the fire. Why? Because there's newness, new life. And we want to talk about celebrating that new life, which is what Joseph and Mary did by going to the temple, right? They went to the temple. Why? To fulfill what was said to them in the law, but to fulfill all prophecy. You too, in your life, you do these things. We go through our own cycles. We go through our own seasons. We have our own rhythms. We have our own time schedules. And each of them help us become the person that we are. That's the celebration of life. That's something you cannot be afraid of. It's okay, in other words. And I say this because sometimes we get too wound up about things, you know? When I look at, like this evening, we're going to be at the cathedral. I'm giving the homily, after which they're going to be lighting a big bonfire out in the courtyard. And I've seen this everywhere, especially one that the image that I can't get out of my head was seeing it in Holy Etchmiadzin, where everybody, not only the seminarians, but people throughout the whole village got together in the middle of Etchmiadzin, and the Catholicos came and lit this giant bonfire. And you realize that, you know, all of it is about community, about coming together, about sharing, about being around that light, being around that place that has meaning, that gives you warmth. And it's okay to have fun. I've shared this with you in the past. You know, when we go out to bless homes, we bless the water for spiritual needs. We bless bread for physical needs. But we also bless salt because you have to have some flavor in life. You cannot live void of flavor. It's so important. And our church stresses that at every moment. Now, that being said, I'm going to add this to it because this comes from me. It's the caution, because I've seen too many times where these extras get misinterpreted. So all of a sudden people are calling up, hey, when's the bonfire? When is the bonfire? When does the church do the bonfire? No, it's not about the bonfire. The bonfire accents what we're doing. You know what I'm talking about? It's like at the Assumption Feast, we bless grapes. People will ask, hey, when's the grape blessing? It's at Assumption, and it's not the great blessing that you're coming for. When do you bless water? We bless it at Christmas time. I want to come and get some blessed water. It doesn't mean anything unless you take it in the context in which it is given. It is presented. And unfortunately, these are many of the trappings that we have in Orthodoxy. And I'll speak only for Orthodoxy in general, but to the Armenian Church specifically, that's the one that I'm most informed about. But certainly all of these traditional church have these kind of trappings that trap the people. Certainly Roman Catholicism has a lot of trappings, right? And you got to be careful. Because when you forget about the intention, what that reason is, you fall into that trap. And it goes back to that beautiful analogy of the bridge. You know, this is the Armenian church, the Christian church, the Orthodox church is this giant bridge. And on one side is earth, on the other side is all of eternity. And too many times we get on this bridge and we just love everything about it, about the bolts, about the ornaments, about the jingles, about the different colors of the bridge. And we stand on that bridge and we look up at the beauty of it and we forget that it has a purpose of uniting us with all of eternity, uniting us with God. And so when we forget it, that's the problem. And that's one of the dangers that we have this evening with the bonfire. People who are going to be coming just for the bonfire. It's not about the bonfire. But this is why you listen to the next step, to connect those dots. It's not about the bonfire. It's about the presentation, about the newness that Christ offers us, the dedication, the cleaning with which they come, that Joseph and Mary come to the church. For young couples, it's an opportunity to focus in on new birth, on the newness of the day. And as Saint Simeon said, he says he marveled and he blessed the child, and he said, this now is a blessing for all of the world. It's time for us to be amazed as well at all of the blessings that come with Christ. That's Diarantaraj. That's what we have to offer. And I'm not scared to say Happy Valentine's Day as well, right? A bishop of Rome who wanted to spread love, Diarantaraj. It's the manifestation of love in our midst. Simeon, the first witness to that manifestation at that temple, 40 days after the birth of Christ. Okay, you okay with that? All right, now let me tell you about the bonfire. If you heard, you haven't heard, okay, on the day of Diarantaraj, on the night before, so what we're going to be doing tonight, we have a bonfire in all the Armenian churches. They have this bonfire and the newlyweds jump over the flame. And I know people start saying, oh, the old heathenistic. Well, guess what? Everything is heathenistic. Everything, at some point, you know, somebody did it. Bonfires have been around as long as the first lightning bolt hit a tree. It's there. And we take advantage of the symbolism of that. I want you to think about it this way. We invite newlyweds to come because it is a time of, what was it that St. Luke said? The purification. And then is there any better way of purifying than with fire? Right? I don't know if this is common, but my dad, he was a physician of sorts. And when we'd go hiking, we'd ever were working in the yard. If we ever got a splinter, he would actually take the splinters out with a needle and to purify that needle, to make it okay to go into your skin, he would put it under fire, get it red hot, and just kill off everything. It's the purification. So we have bonfires, and I want you to think about it this way, and I'll leave you with this thought. The young families who come to church on that day, they come with the expectation of having this blessing and jumping over the fire. They come for fertility, right? Okay, whatever the case may be, the lesson that they hear is the story of Christ's presentation. They hear the story of purification. And where does Christ need to be? He needs to be in the purest of purest, namely a pure heart. And so the cleansing needs to take place. When you jump over the fire, you recognize and you remember that you need to be pure. You need to sanctify. You need to cleanse it. And there is a prayer as you go over those flames. And it's the prayer that I will share with the people this evening because it's so essential. It's a prayer by Saint Nerses the Great. It goes, Hurgen tani Christos, Christ, you are the living fire. Ah, now, when we pass out grapes on the Assumption Day, we pass it out and we say, remember that, right, Christ is the true vine. The Father is the vine dresser. We are the branches, and we give out grapes. It is nothing more than a symbol that points us to a reality of Christ. In the same way, that flame, that bonfire, is a place where there is cleansing taking place. And it points to the reality of Christ being the true living fire. So in this prayer by Saint Nerses Shnorhali, it's one of 24 prayers, it's the 10th verse. Christ, you are the living fire. Inflame my soul with the fire of your love, which you did send forth upon the earth, that it may burn the stains of my soul, sanctify my conscience, purge the sins of my body, and kindle in my heart the light of your knowledge. Now, come on. I mean, does that justify this beautiful bonfire that's built? Does that justify it? Absolutely. That's the prayer. So that when you see that bonfire, you realize that Christ is the living fire. And you ask, inflame my soul with the fire of your love, that it may burn the stains of my soul. Imagine the imagery there, the stains on the soul. Sanctify my conscience, purge the sins of my body, and kindle in my heart the light of your knowledge. Pretty powerful. Powerful for Dhyanantaraj as well as Valentine's as well as life. Piano players here. Let's take a break right now. Here's Susie to make her announcement. I'll be back in a couple moments, okay?
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Well, thank you, Susie, and thank you to all of you for all of your support, your love, your patience, your letters, your kind notes, your expressions, everything that you do to keep this ministry going. I'm up in the Oakland, San Francisco Bay Area, in the town of Oakland on Sunday mornings at St. Vartan Armenian Church, at least up until March 1st. Probably that'll be it. So next few Sundays. Also coming up next week, we have Vartanants. And like I said, this evening, if you happen to be in the Burbank area, we've got Diyar Antaraj. A couple dates that I want you to remember. I'm going to be doing a special session on what's called Ash Wednesday, but it's actually the first Wednesday of Lent. And that's February 26th. In the morning, I'll be speaking at the cathedral, talking about the vestments of the Armenian Church. Then that evening, we begin a six-week series every Wednesday evening. It is called Basic Words, Bars Barer. At this point, I believe it's going to be in Armenian alone, but I'm still not sure, but I think it's in the Armenian language. What I'm going to do is pick out six words that we use, basic words, and then talk about them. For instance, what does the word amen mean? You know, we say it after every prayer. What is its function within the prayer, and what does it actually mean? How about eternity? We talk about it, but what is eternity? Can we grasp it? Just basic words. How about the word I? Not the eyeball, but the I person. Yeah, the ego. Big problems, right? Anyway, going to share that with the community, and I hope to have them recorded, and we'll see about getting them out. I always like to get them up on the net, but it's a matter of time and just about doing them. Anyway, a lot of stuff we wish we could do. We will do them. We're committed to it. It's just been very, 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 very busy. That about does it for today. Hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. Catch us on all the socials. Drop me a line at feedback@epostle. That's apostle with an E, .net. On behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Boss Ken inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I want top limits.